What I am very insistent or passionate about is pulling the influencer content in. You see a big movement now for influencers to create UGC content. We do a lot with influencers for shopper marketing, you know, sending the influencer into a store to show the physicality or them on location is very impactful. Having influencers do ratings and reviews of a product, I think that it's not just that awareness play, it's also how brands internally throughout their marketing organization can leverage influencer content to help drive consumers down the path to purchase.
Welcome to Chase Your Dreams, a podcast for fashion entrepreneurs who want to build a purposeful and profitable clothing business so they can make a living doing what they love. I'm your host, Glynis Tao, an apparel business consultant and SEO specialist with 20 years apparel industry experience. I'm also a mom to a wonderfully energetic little boy named Chase. Sherry Langbert is the CEO and founder of Babblebox and has been a pioneer in the influencer marketing space since 2007. A passion for storytelling and brand marketing and a desire to create an innovative social media solution led Sherry to create Babblebox, the influencer marketing agency best known for its co-sampling and signature box strategies. Hi, Sherry. It's so nice to have you here today. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself and your experience in influencer marketing?
Sure. So I live in New Jersey. I'm via Montreal, where I'm from, and then I lived in New York for many years. I've actually been in the influencer marketing space for more than a decade. I'm not going to go beyond that. So I have worked and I'm so passionate about this space because we've been seeing so much growth. And it's funny to me when people say, oh, influencer marketing started in 2016, but we've been doing it for a long time. And we work with brands on the brand side more to help them come up with strategies and execute and implement those strategies.
Would you be able to tell us who some of the fashion brands that you have worked with? Because I see you have Bagley Mishka and Vince Camuto listed on your website. And also, could you give us an example of what you did for them?
So we work with all different types of fashion brands, the higher end, the mid-tier end. I mean, you said it, Bagley Mishka and Vince Camuto. We've worked with Nine West. We've worked with Macy's, Adidas, when you get into more that loungewear, you know, kind of athleisure. So, you know, across the board, different things that we've done, you know, it can be very specific. I think when people think about fashion, it's always like the fashionista, but a lot of the brands, you know, might be targeting men, might be for Macy's, it was targeting college kids. So it's always different. And we're always trying to kind of come up with the right demo. I think the most important thing when it comes to influencers is making sure that it's the right type of influencer, the right size of influencer, and not necessarily just like, let's do an influencer campaign with fashion. So it's really kind of mapping out the right demo and the key core audience.
And do you have a database of influencers that you work with? I guess you've screened them before, so...
So we're a little bit different. So there's a lot of SaaS platforms, right? These marketing platforms that have thousands or even millions of influencers. We are one of the first. We built one of those platforms way back long ago. And we have the platform. We decided to use it internally. We use it internally. We don't scrape the internet and just find influencers and populate a database unqualified. The influencers that we work with fill out a profile, give us access to the back end of certain systems that they have. But we really are working more. We think that influencers are very high touch. We know that. And so it takes a lot of people skills to be able to balance between the different involved stakeholders. So when we're doing a campaign, we use technology, but we're a team that leverages that technology to then implement on behalf of our clients. So our account management team is instrumental from start to finish in every campaign in finding the influencers, vetting them, contracting them, which involves negotiating with them, et cetera.
Why is influencer marketing such a crucial component for fashion brands in today's digital landscape?
I love it. I think things have evolved. Again, I think that when people look at influencers, and it sounds funny to say traditionally, because it is still so new to so many, they think of like, okay, we're going to leverage influencers for awareness and we're going to go out there. But what I am very insistent or passionate about is pulling the influencer content in. You see a big movement now for influencers to create UGC content. We do a lot with influencers for shopper marketing, you know, sending the influencer into a store to show the physicality or them on location is very impactful. Having influencers do ratings and reviews of a product, I think that it's not just that awareness play, it's also how brands internally throughout their marketing organization can leverage influencer content to help drive consumers down the path to purchase.
And what criteria should fashion brands consider when identifying potential influencers to collaborate with?
There's a lot of criteria. I mean, it starts with, you know, the size of the influencers. Do you want the nanos, which are the small ones, the micros, the macros, all the way up to celebrities? What's your goal is the first thing. Because oftentimes we see, like, especially in fashion and beauty, let's go for that big glam person. And you're putting all your eggs in one basket. I'm not going to say it's right or wrong. But the benefit of maybe working with multiple influencers, and this is a question the brand has to ask, is you reach different audiences, different locations, you get more content. So if you're going to only work with one influencer, you're really just getting one piece of content, one audience. And we know how algorithms work, right? But if you work with more, so I think that's the first criteria, is understanding your goal. Do you want what size of influencer? What format of content? You know, yes, we know, and there's proof that videos work better, but do you need the content for something else? Like, why do you need the content and what format of content? What platforms work? Just because TikTok is amazing, it doesn't mean that it's going to, you know, that's where your brand needs to live. You might see tremendous opportunity if you're a brand in, you know, something run on Facebook or Pinterest. So it really depends on, like, what channels that make sense for your core consumer. Where is your core consumer hanging out? Or do you want to reach new audiences? That's another question. And then the vertical, right? So again, you know, is it what is the vertical for your audience? Is it Gen Z? Is it Gen Y? Is it, you know, do you want to hit kids on college campus? We see a big movement for 50 plus women, really defining very specifically the vertical. You could get super, super specific. What's the appeal of your brand and where does your brand want to be? And then find influencers who kind of fit with that tone.
So how can fashion brands ensure that the influencers they choose align authentically with their brand values and image?
Well, I think that's where the people come in, right? And that's what my team does a lot of the time, right? If you go search, I want influencers who, let's just say, are 45 plus who live in Chicago, there's going to be a lot of them. Then you have to go do the research. And as much as technology helps in filtering and sorting and combing down, you still have to go look. You have to look at the influencers' content. You have to look at brand deals that they've done. Are their competitors? Are the brands aligned, or the past, you know, relationships that they have had aligned? Is there a balance and is there neutrality in, you know, is their whole feed sponsored? Because then it becomes tiresome and doesn't perform as well. So looking and really digging deep into each of the influencers, looking at their comments, oftentimes, particularly in these categories, an influencer does a post and all the comments are, "Hey, babe, I love your hair," has nothing to do with the product. So there's so many different elements that should be, you know, kind of looked at before you go, and the engagement rates, you know, the saves, the sticker taps, the shares, a lot of different variables go into identifying and finding the right influencers.
What are the advantages and potential drawbacks of working with micro influencers versus macro influencers in the fashion industry?
So again, I said part of it. I think another is price point, right? You might have more success, you know, or it might be less expensive to work with the micros. Again, you're going to get more content. The benefit of macros is, you know, they're more experienced, so they might have better content. Not necessarily, that might be an option. They have more credibility, perhaps. And their share of, like, they resonate, you know, probably louder with the audience that gets to see the content. But I do, we see a big, you know, most brands understand that it's like the micros are where they want to be, because you could get a lot more bang for the spend when working with more people than fewer.
And can you just give us a define what the difference is between a micro influencer and macro influencer?
So it's different from every company and every agency. How we look at it is a micro could be someone who has 20 to 100,000 followers. That's a big range. So sometimes we'll categorize micros as mini micros and regular micros. And then the same thing with macros, 100 to a million. But then within that, there's different categories because someone who has 100 to 250,000 is very different than someone who has 900,000 followers.
Yeah. Could you share an example of a fashion brand that successfully aligned with an influencer, resulting in a mutually beneficial partnership?
I mean, again, I'll go back to Macy's. It's a retailer, but what they did that was beautiful was they pulled in multiple brands. So it was for college kids. I think it was, you know, it was very specifically geo-targeted down to the zip code. So zip codes of college campuses, which I thought was really clever. They knew the college campuses that they wanted to hit. We found students within those audiences. We developed one of our Babbel boxes. So it was a Macy's branded box and it was filled with merch. So they brought in and kind of supported some of their brand partners. So Adidas was in the box and Levi's was in the box and Kipling was in the box. So it was a multi-brand collab brought to you by Macy's. But again, very specific to a demo. And then the demo was like the college kids were down to like universities and what geolocation specifically.
What are some key considerations and best practices when negotiating partnerships with influencers?
I think the one key consideration, first of all, is like, what do you need? You know, what is your budget? Do they have exclusivity with other brands? Are you asking for ownership rights? I think ownership rights becomes a very challenging, sticky thing. And exclusivity. So if you do need that, it could be a higher price point. So you need to understand if you want the exclusivity or not, and you want to own the content or not, because those are two big things. And sometimes brands say we want exclusivity for a year, and then they miss out on an opportunity with working with an influencer, when in fact they could say, well, what would it look like? So be open, like have the dialogue with them. Maybe it will be better if you say 6 months. Maybe it will be better. You know, we have brands that start with 3 months and they go down to 2 weeks up front, 2 weeks at, you know, afterwards. So it's really, you know, kind of the ownership rights and the exclusivity are two big things to think about when working with influencers.
That's interesting. It's just another question along those lines in terms of legal considerations. What are the brands that brands would need to be aware of when working with influencers?
Yeah, those were probably the two, you know, most, and I'm not an attorney. I'm married to one, but I'm not an attorney. But most of the content that influencers create, you're allowed to share on social, like your brand on social channels, as long as you tag the influencer. But beyond that, so what we're finding is that these assets become like UGC, right? So brands want them for ads. They want them for their newsletter because the influencers do such a great job. They want to be able to use them for their website. And that's where you have to legally, you know, agree with the influencers on specific terms and conditions. That's what we're talking about. Ownership. If you want to use them beyond social, you have to kind of get that kind of different types of rights from the influencer and you have to negotiate that up front. You can't just use it.
Did your company help with that?
Yeah.
So we help facilitating the agreements. Rights, yeah, and yeah. Okay. How do fashion brands strike a balance between providing creative direction and allowing influencers the freedom to express their unique style?
Well, first of all, don't criticize their outfit. No, I think, you know, I think that you have to provide guidelines to the influencers, but you have to allow them the flexibility. You know, again, sometimes we see that brands are so hyper focused on, you know, certain elements. And I think it takes away from the creative aspect. And then we talked about legal. Once all this has to go into legal, the one thing we say is like, maybe all the changes are really legal changes and not style changes, especially when you're talking fashion. Because if you start making changes like, I didn't like her hair, or could she change her shoes? Or, you know, then you're taking away from the creative liberty of the influencer. And be as specific up front. So the more specific you could be, like if you say, we want this to be, you know, this photo shoot to be done, you know, at a ski mountain, make that, you know, clear, or like near snow, make it clear up front so that you don't get disappointed that the person decided to do it in their house. You know, be as specific as you can up front, open, but specific.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering about, in terms of expectations, setting expectation on what the brand would expect from the influencer, in terms of like, oh, how many posts are they going to get? How do they ensure that, you know, that those expectations are met?
So again, this is where, you know, it's in your contract or the scope of work that should be highlighted in advance. And, you know, I'm going to assume we pay all of our influencers. So if you're going into a financial agreement with an influencer, then this, all the deliverables and the guarantees have to be included in that contract. So when you're going to post, the duration of the campaign, number of pieces of content, where the content is being posted, the frequency of the posting, all that should be highlighted in the contract. And then also in your kind of guidelines, when you send them guidelines.
Okay. Because I don't know, I imagine it's not something that all brands do, is create a contract up front. So often it hears stories about somebody paying for an influencer to do something based on their promise and then not delivering.
A lot of times that happens when it's more organic, like I'm going to gift you these jeans, but it's an organic kind of like that PR type of initiative, like we're gifting influencers, and then they get upset. But when you pay an influencer, if there's a financial exchange, then I think that there has to be a contract and a scope of terms of deliverables. Yeah.
And it also reflects on their own professional reputation as well. If, you
yeah.
know,
they don't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to look good on them either.
And I also strongly suggest, like, especially if you're working with multiple influencers, it's hard, but if you're doing this yourself, like having a kickoff call, like, hey, we're the brand, and like getting to know the influencers. And that's why I think when you talk about technology, it serves its purpose, but I think there's so many touch points. And, you know, it's storytelling. So just doing it with the within the confines of technology stays flat. If you do a kickoff call before a campaign or have a one-on-one dialogue with an influencer, so much more can happen. And one of the things we do too is having, again, this isn't to control the creative, but to ensure that not all influencers are doing the same concept. We have them fill in, like send us like their concept before they like create it. So it saves you time, it saves you money. It saves rework on the influencer side, because what happens if all 10 influencers say, well, I want to do this lookbook, and it's all 10 influencers are doing the exact same thing? You might not want that. So having influencers give you like some creative concepts before they start filming or shooting is great too.
Good advice. I have a question in terms of a brand, if they want to approach this themselves, like how can they reach out to an influencer? Like what can they say? How do they approach an influencer?
It's so funny because I know people in PR and they can hit the media all day long, which I can't, I'm terrified to write the press, but they're like scared to write an influencer. I think influencers get this reputation, even maybe because there's the big ones, right? Like, oh my God. But I would find their email, write them an email in the subject line, say media opportunity or partnership opportunity. It helps to say paid partnership opportunity because a lot of influencers don't want to do the gifting ones or don't want to do things for free. If you can't, what we're seeing with TikTok is a lot of the influencers are forgetting to put their email. They're younger, they don't go by emails, so it's very hard to connect with them. So you have to go on the social channels, DM them, private message them. And if that doesn't work, sometimes what you have to do, if they don't, they may not see it, right? So in the body of a post of their comments on something else, say, hey, trying to get in touch with you, can you check your DMs? Because oftentimes they just don't see it.
Okay, great advice. I was always wondering about that. I have clients who I work with who want to get into influencer marketing and want to know how to go about it and how to reach out, because they have, you know, a list of influencers that they want to talk to, approach, but I guess they just don't know what to say yet. So it's like, what's the best approach? You know, you want to make a good impression.
Yeah, it's not scary. They all want a partner. I think the perception is that, oh my God, they're just this, it's like, you know, Hollywood, they're untouchable. How do you pitch them? So it's the same kind of, but you know, most influencers will be very responsive if and when they see your note, if you could find their contact information.
That's great. And so what are some effective methods for measuring the return on investment of influencer marketing campaigns for a fashion brand?
So I'm going to be very honest, like the sale is not, it's a different part of the funnel, right? You're starting with an awareness play. You could definitely give influencers tracking links and discount codes and measure the redemption on those, check the link, see, you could check your site traffic. But I also think that one of the big things companies don't think about is the savings. If you're doing influencer marketing in a holistic integrative approach, then there are savings that are a return on investment, right? So now all of a sudden the person who's managing your brand on social doesn't have to sit there and create content all day long because they have this funnel of content that they could reuse and reshare. That's saving them time, that's saving you resource dollars, et cetera. You know, oftentimes we see like the advertising team or your advertising agency, they're turning to Getty Images or they're doing photo shoots. Well, you could turn with the right rights in place, like we discussed, you could turn that into ads. So you're saving on so many different, in so many different areas, not just the dollar, but the time spent, that I think that that has to be part of the conversation with influencer that people just don't think about.
Yeah, great advice. How do you see influencer marketing landscape evolving, especially in the context of the fashion industry, and what trends should brands be mindful of?
I definitely think this TikTok shop, which launched this summer, like, you know, the influencers being able to sell products directly within TikTok for sure. I think you're going to start to see, and it happens, but it's the larger ones, but these extensions of influencers creating their own product lines. I think, you know, we're getting to a point where every influencer is their own business unit. You know, the successful ones don't have to have 100 million followers or 50 million followers. They're creating their own product lines. They're creating their own courses. And so I think working with influencers ahead of that and being able to, you know, kind of work with them in that way would be great for brands.
Yeah, because I mean, they started from somewhere. Everybody's started from somewhere, right? And I think it's at that point where you can find someone, catch them at the beginning, maybe.
You see so many nanos and they're small, but some of them, their content is just so beautiful and their engagement is so high. We have some influencers that when they started with us, they were like, have 20,000 and now they hit 250,000 followers, and we're just an agency, but they're very loyal to us because we were with them from the beginning. And so I think that, you know, trying to see where the influencers are going in their journey and helping support that as a brand, you know, having influencers as spokespeople more often, ambassadors for your brand, but also kind of helping them launch into this business that they're their own business and working with them to create business opportunities.
I just thought of a question I want to ask you in terms of AI.
Oh, God.
Okay. How does AI come into play? Do you guys use AI in your business?
So we don't. I mean, right when, you know, the whole AI, we were like, oh, my God, our influencers are going to be replaced. And I think it can't be replaced because they're so human. Like, could influencers use AI to help them write captions maybe, or to help them do certain things? Yes. But at the end of the day, it's still them creating the message. And if they rely on it too much, it's going to be pretty obvious. So I think that AI is a tool, like if I'm going to use spell check in Word, it's a tool that can help support influencer marketing or support influencers in creating content. But I certainly don't think, I mean, even the fake influencers, like there's been like, oh, look at this fake influencer. They gathered 200 million followers. If they can't, part of the connection with an influencer is that it's a real person that you connect with. So if it's a fake, you know, person, I don't think that there's going to be that loyalty or relationship that we see with influencers.
Yeah. And I'm sure we all get them in our IG DMs of people spamming us and asking us to be ambassadors of their brand. Are those fake? Are they bots? Like, let's just like.
Yeah, like my LinkedIn is like that now.
I imagine they're fake because I see they have zero followers. Or But I get so many of those and it's so annoying.
Yeah.
So, do you have any final advice or tips to share with our listeners who are looking to include influencer marketing in their marketing strategy?
Yeah, the one thing I think that's really critical now is that we've seen so many brands are doing this in bursts, right? It's back to school, it's holiday, we've got a new collection coming out and it's a burst. And I think the big thing now, when you see all the benefits and the UGC, and if you're integrating influencer properly, we're seeing more of this always on. So, you know, maybe you do have those bursts, but if you're not, like what someone said to me recently is social media platforms are your showroom. If you're a fashion brand, it's your showroom. And so if you're not on all the time, and it doesn't have to be on, you know, elevated or amplified, but a consistent, steady flow to maintain your brand exposure and awareness throughout the year, you know, that's really critical. So that always on, in addition to just considering influencers for these burst campaigns, is critical.
Great. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
Awesome. Well, I can give you my cell, but you know, that's kind of, so we are BabbleBox Official, Instagram. It's BabbleBox with two X's. So on Instagram, on Facebook, on TikTok, it's just, but the biggest one is really BabbleBox on Instagram. And then if they want to reach out to our team, it's team@BabbleBox, and that's BabbleBox.com. And we're happy to share any insights or, you know, help come up with themes or strategies for any influencer campaigns.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Sherry, for being here today and sharing your insight and expertise with us. It's been so great talking to you.
You too. Thanks so much for having me. And I look forward to staying in touch with you, and always, you know, reach out if you need anything.
Thank you so much for tuning in. You can find me on Instagram at Glynis Tao and my website, glynistao.com. Please subscribe to Chase Your Dreams podcast if you haven't already. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others who you think this may help. And lastly, it would be great if you left a rating and review for our podcast. See you next time.